I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
And a very special guest. Do you want to introduce yourself? I don't really know how to do a guest.
I can't believe that I'm special. I'm Tom Searle. Do I need to say that?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, why not?
I play guitar in the band Architects.
Hello.
Otherwise, if I didn't say that, people might just be like, well, why is he here?
Well, I mean, none of us playing any kind of...
you don't have to offer any credentials.
Nah, yeah. Just like... Fair enough. Basically, do you live in Brighton or have you got access to Skype? That's like your only things that we need for you to get on the podcast. So, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
It's be quite fun, I think. It's a bit weird having a guest.
Yeah. You are quite weirded out by the whole thing of having a guest. Should we just kick it off in the conventional manner and then we'll run into some... additional questions.
What I was thinking is that yes, we could do well, we've got a choice. We could either talk about what's gone on this week because there have been some guitar related stuff and things happening, there's a bit of news, or we could dive straight into talking to Tom. What would you like to do?
I think we should just dive straight into talking to Tom. We can talk about other stuff later. It depends on how interesting he is. If he runs out of things to say,
I'm sure it's going
to
be very good.
Then we'll have to kick it back to the start.
Other way around in order to sort of, you know, ease Tom into it a bit. But, you know, I feel like as
I'm
you suggested
easy,
it first, we'll
as you can see, this is a proper slick operation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
we're unprepared. So what I think we should do is so I've listened to a couple of podcasts where they talk about like someone's got their phone on that is making a noise. I think it might have been me, actually. So other podcasts, what they like to do is talk about like people's like secret origin in a comic book style-y. How did you get into guitar playing and influences and stuff like that? So let's kick off with that, I guess. How did you get into guitar playing and what were your influences?
Well, I was always brought up on guitar music or rock. As they call it.
Often called.
You know, Nirvana and Foo Fighters, Tom Petty and stuff like that. My parents always played that. And then my dad always had a Strat that was just sort of spent time hanging on the wall, really. And I played bass because all my friends played guitar in school. And I thought, I can't do that because all my friends do it. Because I was a child who didn't understand anything.
Okay.
Eventually, I got over that ridiculousness, and I played the guitar because that's why I just always wanted to do it. And you get good at things that you always want to do, don't you?
Was the Strat your first guitar?
Well, I never really felt like it was what I learnt on, but it was
Strats were never
you know
for
it
you.
Was never. I never even changed the strings on it. You know, it was just battered, well, not battered, but brand new and untouched, but dull. You know, I love Strats. I have one now that I bought years later when I had my period of being obsessed with Pink Floyd. I learned my first few songs on that or whatnot, and then eventually I saved up and bought myself one of those cheap PRSs that they brought out. I think I loved
it. The SEs?
Yeah. I loved Incubus when I was 14 or 15.
PRSs are great. Wait a second. Weren't Incubus... Music Man, or is that later?
No, PRS. 100%.
I'm sure he plays Albert Leeds now.
Well, quite possibly, but yeah.
Yeah, but he's, no one's listening.
Yeah.
that might be true. Did anyone hear their last record, incidentally?
No, definitely not.
Called Wish You Were Here.
If a tree falls in the forest.
is anyone listening to Incubus? The answer is no. So, Strat is what you got started on, which actually I think answers one of the questions, but we can go over those later on. How did you get into doing like more metal-focused stuff?
The heavy metal stuff.
The heavy metal stuff.
What was the PRS-SE, just then, on that line?
What was it?
Yeah, which model SE series?
It was a green one.
Santana 1,
sorry,
probably.
Sorry to disappoint the nerds.
That's what we're here for.
I think it was just, I went into a local guitar shop, which will remain nameless.
Okay. Probably for the best.
Briefed well.
And I just bought the one that was cheapest, that looked a bit like the one that the guy in Incubus played. I never really had the right pickups or anything. I remember playing it and being like, why doesn't this sound like, you know, Deftones guitar sound? But I you know, what made my transition into playing metal? I mean, I know that I went down to the Concord 2 one day when I was 14 years old or something, and it was like all day, and I think Hiding with Girls were playing. This is probably going to be irrelevant information.
Yeah, I mean, these are quite local references.
But you guys know what I'm talking about. And Johnny Truant were playing. And
I was definitely at that show.
Yeah,
100%. I was at that show.
And
Wall of Denial, I think.
Wall of Denial.
Played that show.
Yeah, absolutely. Junk DNA. Yeah. I mean.
Some classic bands.
Johnny Truant were famous endorsed back then.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, and so I think that was, I just remember watching them and being like, wow, this is sort of, I'm almost a little bit scared by it, you know, which is ridiculous in retrospect. But, you know, it had an impression on me anyway. And
so that was like your first exposure to like metal live?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I suppose I think I had started to have some interest in like Poison the Well and even that first Killswitch Engage album and stuff, and so yeah, it just sort of naturally went from there. You know, I was in school at the time, and you know, from there it went into Dillinger Escape Plan, and I became absurdly obsessed with that band for many years, and Sixth as well, another really inspirational band to me that just made me want to push myself and take me out of this, like, I'd think, well, if they can play it, you know, I can, you know, why not? That confidence dried up pretty quick.
Nice to have
when I started trying to.
Nice to have Sixth back as well.
And yeah,
they're PRS endorsed.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Signature models and everything.
Oh. Well, Pin plays a Black Machine, and someone, I saw a link for a Black Machine going for $30,000 on eBay or something like that. It's a bit of wood.
That's like not even that much money in the big scheme of things. Like, you can buy new guitars for that, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Crazy money. So that's what got you kind of started. What about actually like getting into playing that style and like buying a guitar that was maybe more suited towards that?
Yeah, I got it was when I got our band, well, our first, we had a guitarist join called Tim, I was really good friends with him, and he had different guitars like Ibanez's and Gibson's and stuff, and I'd never got to be near guitars that were so, like, fancy.
Yeah.
And he lent me a Gibson for a long while that I played for a long while. But it wasn't until I got, thanks to my Dillinger Escape Plan obsession, I got a LTD MH1000, you know, with EMGs in, so it finally sounded like metal. I played that for years and years and years. I must have done hundreds and hundreds of shows with it, and that was my, I loved that thing. I loved it for years, and luckily eventually, I say eventually, it wasn't that long actually, it was 2007 or 2008 maybe, got endorsed by ESP, and got given a few LTDs, and yeah, that was me with them for years and years, and I loved them as well. Yeah.
You've recently made another move.
Yeah, I've made another move, haven't I? Yeah, I did do first act for a while, but let's not talk about that.
No, we should. There are actually questions about that, and I think it came up a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
We did have a question.
You didn't believe me about the fate of first act.
Yeah,
it's finished now, isn't it?
No, it's not.
It's not.
It still exists, but first act now make Spider-Man ukuleles.
Yep.
Is that, yeah.
SpongeBob ukuleles.
Yeah. Is that all they make?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we looked it up because I didn't believe you at all. No. And yeah, apparently
the
first act now
still exists,
has now in some way gone into making like commercial children's. I think what they do is they buy the license, so they're buying like SpongeBob or Marvel or whatever, and they're making things around that, whether it's ukulele or little kids' guitars and things like that.
But you actually came onto first act at a time when they were really gaining momentum, especially in sort of metalcore, and they were throwing out a few signature models as well.
They were throwing them out. I think the thing is that they put the horse before the carriage or something, you know. It was like, it was all... got ahead of themselves a little bit, and it was too good to be true. You know, the amount they were throwing out at all these different artists, like if you're giving a guitarist like me at the level we were at that time, multiple free custom guitars.
Yeah, because it was all coming out of a custom shop, like that equivalent to sort of Fender's $2,500 a pop custom shop.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think they were. It was all very enchanting, the idea of this these custom guitars, but I think the truth is that I preferred the LTD that I was playing before.
Did you stay with First Act for long?
It probably was only 2.5 years or three, really? Or maybe 3 years. I don't know. Time is...
You left ESP for the First Act things at the time.
Yeah, but that, I think I went back to ESP.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah. That because I... Oh, yeah, at the time, it was my situation with LTD was pretty woeful. I mean, once I stopped being, you know, like a kid with stars in his eyes about it, I'm endorsed by LTD. And I started realizing that, you know, they didn't really give...
They were just
toss
cheap,
about me.
Very cheap guitars, aren't you?
Yeah, so then I went to them, and then by the time that whole thing with First Act was over, ESP, you know, started speaking to the guys in the US, and they were giving me the ESPs. And
I guess that's to do with your career kind of building up over time,
sure,
as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, I mean, I don't know if anyone even cares to hear about the inner workings of the hierarchy at ESP, but I think
it's actually one of the most complicated hierarchies of
I think for the sake of this podcast we should probably not go into that too deeply, but like you say, probably when you were earlier on, you know, I guess that's the benefit of releasing more records and proving that you can do it for years and years. You start getting better endorsement deals.
Yeah, sure. And in retrospect, I was very lucky to get any deal in the early stage. I mean, that was pretty wild, really. We were that one rung above being just a local band, really, you know.
So was that the first record?
First and second, I think, first and second.
So that's what, 2006
to 2008,
right,
I'd say.
Yeah.
Maybe into 2009. Yeah, maybe in 2009,
Right.
Okay. So what are you playing now?
I'm with Mayonnaise now.
Okay.
This is the most exciting one, I think, for the things you play. Because I don't think we've ever mentioned Mayonnaise.
Well, unsurprisingly, I mean, you've seen the pink Mosrite copy that's sitting over there, and Jay's Les Pauls and stuff. They're not guitars that we often cross paths with.
This is actually something that we should get more into doing. We've tried it before, and I with just the four of us, and the problem is that because all of us are like Fender and Gibson...
Inward facing.
Yeah. It's very much with this podcast, obviously, we're kind of, none of us are like metal players, so crossing paths with, you know, things like custom build, you know, like Mayonnaise and things like that, we don't often have a lot of interaction with them. So tell us a little bit about the company first, because like I say, it's probably the first mention ever on Guitar Nerds.
Right.
And more about the guitar that you actually play.
Well, this is by far and away the company of all the ones that I've played that I am the most interested in and most excited about. Firstly, I mean, the guitars are just fantastic. I mean, I couldn't, you know, I definitely got to a point with ESP where I started, and might sound bad, but I started getting to the point where, you know, these initially very precious things to me were sort of the things that I would drag across the stage by the strap with no respect whatsoever. And they weren't really very dear to me anymore. So I was looking for a new company, and I can't remember who I saw playing them, but anyway, it's a Polish company, and all I knew is initially I'm just a guy that likes the way guitars look.
Yeah.
So it's first and foremost, you know, we'll get to how they play and how they sound and all that boring stuff later. And I just loved the way they looked, and then I contacted them, I filled out an endorsement form, and they said, yeah, great, you know, we'll work with you. So away we went, and I just got a loan guitar off them, but I still have, I ended up keeping it.
Is it the Regius?
Yeah,
that
yeah, that's series? I have four of them.
I was surprised that you said that. You said you go for things on the basis of the way that they look, because the Regius is the guitar is that they market themselves as being like the player's guitar. It's certainly right. the least swag of all the
right
the mayonnaise things.
Right, yeah. Well, it just, you know, I got to a point where I wasn't into like the super metal looking thing. I mean, my band is pretty super metal, really, but I'm not really a super metal guy, you know. And it just sort of has that look about it where it's like classy and without being, you know, it's not like a BC Rich Warlock,
yeah.
You know.
It crosses that session player.
Yeah, you could you could play non-metal with it. Non-metal, it's a pretty broad.
Yeah. Just anything but country.
So the other three that you have, are they all, did you go for the Regius body shape and net profile with all of them?
Yeah, just one of them I got Fanfret.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How have you been finding that?
Well, I actually don't play it because the
friends are banned.
No, it's actually just a tone thing. It's just that the bridge. You got the wrong guy on here.
Monorail.
Anyway, the bridge just doesn't sound as bright and sparkly as the ones on the others. So it just lost. It turned out in the end, I did care about how it sounded.
Yeah.
It plays fine. I was really surprised, actually. And our bass player has a Fanfret bass as well that he's incredibly ashamed of.
Really? Is this also a mayonnaise construction?
No, that's a Dingwall.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Which we just used on our last record for some of the songs that were down in like F sharp sort of thing. And it sounded great.
That's actually another point, because you're... What are you tuning down into? G?
We do a few tunings. One's just C sharp standard,
right?
And then one is like C sharp standard, but with the low C sharp down to G sharp,
right?
Which is sort of something ripped off Mastodon.
And you use a 70 for that.
70, yeah, that's right.
Which is, you know, thicker than the D string on my bass.
It's pretty beefy.
Yeah, it's just standard fare for me these days. And then sometimes down in F sharp. Which is just not the whole guitar again, it's just the one string, because I've never really, lots of other bands in the genre do the whole tuning the whole guitar thing down, but I know why we ended up taking this route of just tuning the one string down and having the rest stay the same, but it kind of forces you into making sort of musical composition decisions.
Yeah, it gives you an interesting range anyway.
Yeah, sure. It's just, I don't know, you don't have that whole guitar sludgy, like, you still have the clarity of the highest stuff.
Anyway. And what pickups are you using in the mayonnaise?
Especially
to try and get clarity out of a low F.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think that the thing is about having a low F is in that tuning is you tend to just use it as a single string. You don't use it in like these chuggy chords. You can't chug in it because it's two F sharps together. It doesn't sound heavy remotely. It just sounds like this, you know. Yeah. You guys are nodding, so yeah, you do.
Yeah. And for the sake of the listeners, we all nodded then.
Yeah. You know. I use in most of them. In all of them, I have bare knuckle pickups.
Oh, really? Do you retrofit those then? Mayonnaise, sure they don't. They come with bare knuckles.
Yeah, well, I got, they're all, I did put some in the lone one and things like that, but the rest of them are all custom stuff. But I believe if you order a guitar from Mayonnaise, then you can just ask for whatever pickups you like, they'll do it.
I don't understand how bare knuckle are making enough pickups at the moment, because so many brands are starting to move over to them. Ibanez have just done a range with bare knuckles in. Yeah, with sort of multicoloured bare knuckles in.
I guess you just scale
one
up.
Fella.
You buy more machines.
But it's one fella. It's not one fella.
No, I know. He hires all the students in his local village over the summer.
You know about that?
To coil.
Yeah. Because they're all hand wound, but like it's just this one village. And whereas, like, you know, when we were kids, we'd maybe go and have, like, you know, a paper round or like working budgings or something like that. If you live in this one village,
I actually did both of those things.
if you live in this one village, your Saturday job is winding pickups.
So there's a sweatshop somewhere in Cornwall.
Yeah.
So you're
not a serious claim.
So your prize bare knuckle pickups were actually wound by some sort of smelly hungover student on a Sunday.
Yeah, the blood of child's fingers. Yeah.
So, have you ever experimented with like extended range stuff?
Actually, yeah, I should probably mention that they're all baritone.
Okay.
Yeah. Apart from the pan fret one, which is half
baritone. How about more strings?
I had a 7-string actually. We did a song on our third record on a 7-string. People say, "Oh, when are you going to play?" And I said, "Well, I sold the guitar a week after we recorded it, so never." I did play around with it, but it just, you know, again, like with what we're doing with just down tuning the one string, I feel so comfortable playing a 6-string. Admittedly. I mean, maybe I could get into a 7-string, but the time I did, I had one. It just didn't click with me.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I would like it now. I've resisted the baritone thing for ages. But we played down in G sharp for years on a regular scale length, and I was like, oh, I won't like it. It'll be like a bass guitar or something. and now I love it, and I'll never go back.
I was going to say, how did you initially react to the kind of change in like string tension going from something that's regular scale and down tuned to then a baritone? Did it just instantly feel better? Or?
Yeah, it was like revelation. Right. Like, oh my, what have I been doing?
Right.
You know, this is totally the way forward. And it allowed me to use the tuning so much more effectively because you don't have to, well, for a start, if you put a guitar in G sharp, regular scale length, you can't really fret anything on it. It just buzzes and bends and it's out of tune. So it was cool. It opened up loads of new opportunities.
I have to say, Tom, I really feel like that little sound bite there is something that every person who works in a guitar shop should have, like, just with them.
Just because on the phone, just
I mean,
little.
I would attribute a lot of my misery of working in a guitar shop to you personally, with people coming in and saying, like, oh, I want to play in, like, drop G sharp on my Telecaster. Can you set it up? Like, no, it doesn't work like that. and I, you know, we've never had this conversation, but I do hold you pretty responsible for that. And I just feel like if someone had that on the soundbite, it's like, no, Tom Searle says you need to get the baritone.
Get a baritone.
Yeah, well, or get a 7-string, like,
or
like
get,
you,
or get
you,
a seven
like you
string.
Bought.
I had a 7-string at one point, I did. Yeah,
was it a baritone 7-string?
No, it was a standard.
Now that is a guitar.
Yeah,
the,
Stephen Carpenter.
Stephen Carpenter.
Yeah. I had a baritone. His was one of the ones I got. LTD actually. Yeah, but didn't stay with me long.
Yeah.
So how about the rest of the rig? Talked a bit about guitars. What are you using? Should we do amps first, and then we'll get into the real interesting stuff? Like, we love guitars and amps, but
the amps is interesting.
It's the pedal board is where it's at, I guess. But let's talk about amps first.
Sure. Just shuffling for some reason.
Yeah, no worries. So, what are you using?
Right now, I've got a Diesel, a Herbert.
Okay.
Which I got sometime last year. And I'd always sort of fantasized about getting one because they're expensive.
Are you endorsed by Diesel as well, or is that just something?
Yeah.
So the Herbert's quite an interesting choice as well. Out of the three of them, out of the series,
yeah.
Because that's the Herbert's a 3-channel amp, but it's got quite an interesting crunch channel because it's voiced in 3 different modes.
In 2. Oh. I believe it's got the plus and the minus.
Oh yeah, that's right. But minus is supposed to be plexi. And I think is like JCM 800. Mm-hmm. I thought there was an extra bit where it's supposed to be like Diesel voicing.
Right. I don't think
I did. But I did inverted commas with my hands.
I haven't
then.
Found it.
Oh right.
So,
but I'm no expert.
Diesel's not an obvious choice, I guess, particularly in this country where I don't think they've got a distributor. Like, I don't actually know who brings them in.
Right, right.
I don't really know where you buy one.
Yeah, I mean, there's James up in London, but it's a bit of a one-man show.
Okay,
yeah.
Sure. Why Diesel, basically?
Well, you know what? Again, it's funny. Well, like you say, people come in and ask you to put their guitars in G-sharp because they might have seen me do it or something. I used to love Sixth. I still love Sixth and used to go on tour with Sixth, and they would play them, and I was like, well, these guys can play guitar great.
Yeah.
So they must know about what the best amps are, and they were playing them. And so, yeah, I mean, I knew they were like good quality amps. So and our other guitarist, Adam, hates this because he'll research. He plays
Messer, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He's just got a Mark V and he has a dual rack as well. And he buys like 3 wash bags and then returns 2 when he decides which his favourite is. It's real, you know, that's real.
I thought you were going to say wash burns. I thought you were talking about
I'm talking about it's down to a wash bag. That serious. Whereas I'm more like, yeah, Diesel, Herbert, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I saw one and then I bought one.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I do think it is really cool, and I do really like it. I actually am going up to London tomorrow to potentially buy a VH4 as well.
Okay,
really? Oh, that would be cool.
Because I need
that's like the flagship Diesel.
Yeah, that's the super fancy one, isn't it? That's the one where I decided I couldn't afford when I got the Herbert.
Right.
But now I'm really just throwing caution to the wind. I just think if I act like I've got this money, then the universe will give it to me.
Absolutely. Okay. Do you use much of the channel selecting, the amp selecting on the Herbert?
Yeah, so I use all 3 channels. Unfortunately, the Plexi Marshall thingy isn't foot switchable, so I
isn't it?
No.
Oh, right.
So
of course, because it's just on a rotary,
it's a voicing rather than a channel.
So I just, but I make the best of it. and there's a foot switchable mid cut, second
That's
volume.
That's the
channel.
Other thing that makes it like super suitable for metal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is a built in mid cut.
Yeah. Totally. And I mean, I'm just getting it. I mean, this will lead us onto where I'm sure you guys want to talk about, but I'm just getting it set up with all the MIDI and all the rest of it to make the full use of it all, really. But right now, I am still tap dancing.
Really?
Okay. I say still, those days are over. By the next time we play a show, I won't be tap dancing anymore.
Okay. We'll get onto pedals and stuff in a minute. What are your thoughts on things like Axe FX and Kemper? The more like digital side of things, because obviously a lot of metal bands at the moment are switching over to that.
Yeah,
a lot of people that do as many gigs as you do are switching over to that kind of system, because you can just set it up. Doesn't matter where you're playing; it could be a festival, it could be a little club. You kind of always get the same sound.
Yeah.
Have you ever used anything like that? And what do you kind of think about it?
I have a Kemper at home, actually, I mean, presuming they won't listen to it, they sent it to me, and then I emailed them saying, "Hey guys, I'll buy this off you," and then I didn't hear anything for a year.
Fine.
Scott, the guy who owns the company, is actually a Patreon backer.
And if I'm honest, I haven't fully explored it yet. I've just used it for demoing. I haven't made my own profiles and all that stuff. I don't have an opinion on Axe FX because I haven't played with any of that stuff, but I would say that if anything was breathing down my neck, it would be Kemper, because everyone I know that uses them says these things are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
They're brilliant for what you do, definitely.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
The sort of clarity and isolation that metalcore requires, they are very good for.
And also just the functionality of taking something around on tour.
I still can't get my head around that ever being sort of a relevant thing for music to do.
But like, that's because
this one's convenient. This one comes in its own bag.
But that's because you're not doing any flying gigs. Yeah, like if you're doing fly-ins, then it's small enough to fit in hand luggage. It doesn't mean that you need to pay to get something shipped, and you're not relying on what's there when you get there.
Actually, you said it when we were talking about. When we were chatting, when I was chatting with Juan Aldrete from the Mars Volta, and I was asking why they changed to using a combo, just one orange combo, and why he changed to using Ampeg Portaflex combos, he was saying it's because
hand luggage.
They were having to take a whole truck for their setup, and this way they could take a splitter.
Yeah,
I get the impression Adam, the other guitarist in your band, wouldn't be very happy with moving away from
probably
the big amps.
Probably not.
More so than you. I think you're a lot more adaptable, and I get Adam's a lot more like no. Mess a boogie.
He loves John Mayer and twiddling and, you know, like playing like licks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I think John Mayer was your first word of reference. Because that's what I think when I think of architects is.
He's
like a guitar player.
He's the guy that I hear when I go into guitar stores.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Blues or something. And I'm like, I don't know about that stuff. Yeah.
Adam's actually quite interesting. So he only joined your band, what, 2 years ago?
I can't remember, yeah, something in that bracket.
How do you think having... Because obviously Architects started out as a band with two guitars. Mm-hmm. And then for a long time it was just you, right?
Yeah. We never played a show with just me, but it was just on paper it was just me.
Right, okay. Has having that other guitar player... in like rehearsals and in songwriting sessions changed what you do you think?
How were we doing it before? I can't even remember. It wasn't that long ago. No, having Adam has definitely, especially like in the studio and stuff, like he's probably the guy you want to be speaking to right now instead of me.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I've been thinking.
He's really, really, really into the gear side of it. And, you know, he we laugh at him because he will take like the manual for his new head on tour with him, and that'll be his casual reading.
Right. Matt Nutt. Yeah. So the other guy who normally does the podcast is very much that guy as well. He'll read the manual from cover to cover.
Not just that, he's a big advocate of
reading the manual for things that you could just plug in and probably work out how they work anyway.
And I'm a big advocate of do not read the instructions. And just, you know, hope for the best. And if you get frustrated and it doesn't work, that's, you know, well, I'm not going to learn. I'm not going to read the instructions.
Just watch a YouTube video.
Sell
it and buy something else.
Yeah, it's too complicated.
It's not for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were talking about that Flint earlier on the pedal board, and I've still not read the manual. There's like hidden features in that that I don't know how to use.
You only found out that it had hidden features because one of us mentioned on a podcast.
I told you. Yeah. I'm the worst one.
Told you about a pedal.
Don't read the manual.
An effect pedal.
Don't read the manual.
Life's too short.
Totally. Well, with that, should we talk about pedal boards?
Go on then.
So you mentioned when you came in before we started recording that you're a big fan of Strymon. What have you got on your board?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
What have you got on the whole board, actually? Not just the Strymon stuff, but how does the Strymon stuff specifically kind of fit in?
Sure. Well, actually, I've just done a whole board revamp. And
okay.
I'm just getting it.
Because you're fitting in the MIDI stuff.
Yeah, so I got one of the Boss ES8 things. I've got the three Strymons. I've got the Mobius, Timeline, and the Big Sky.
Okay.
Which I bought in sort of a a frenzy of pedal passion, really.
Yeah, from me.
From you, yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, like yeah. One
you,
after
I
the
remember
other.
This. You came in and I was like, oh, I thought you were on tour. And you were like, yeah, I was yesterday. Can I try out one of those Strymon pedals, please? Just, yeah.
And sort of in the space of a couple of months, ended yeah. up buying them all.
I don't even think it was a couple of months. I think you maybe insured me hitting my commission that month. I've got to
say. So this frenzy, was this brought on by seeing someone use them?
Yeah. To be weird, we'd just done a tour with an Australian band called North Lane.
Okay.
And they are gear freaks.
Okay.
And they've got like two pedal boards each, and they've all got Kempers on each one.
Right.
They look like spaceships. It's completely crazy. And this was at a point where we were still, you know, they were supporting us on our tour, but we were still sort of lugging around our ancient 6505s in cardboard boxes. And the support band was showing up with pedal boards that looked like they could fly you to the moon.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe it was like after that I was like, okay, maybe I should start investing a little bit of money into what I do or something. But I was just, I don't know, I was just in, having, it wasn't necessarily even seeing or hearing what those guys did with them. Again, I think I was just enchanted by the way they looked.
They do look, when you see those, the three big Strymons together, it like...
£350 a pedal.
Well, yeah. Are they? I've forgotten that.
Yeah.
Tried to forget.
It's terrifying when you put it like that. But yeah, when you see those three together, like, and they are the three that you see on like loads of people's pedal boards these days, it just looks awesome. They, you know, all the same size, they've got that metallic finish, and you know, like you say, it kind of looks like it could fly a spaceship.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they look so good, it made me spend £350 on a modulation pedal when I'd never used chorus or flange or anything in a song ever.
Just you got really into the cue.
I have now. I have now because I had it.
But which way around is it? Is it the fact that you bought the pedal meant that you had to use it in a song? Or was it that you needed the chorus, so you bought the pedal?
I definitely didn't need the chorus.
Right.
I definitely didn't. It was, but I like that. I like the idea of having the way some of these things that you do buy can influence your creativity. I mean, whether it's getting a baritone guitar for the first time influencing my creativity, or getting a modulation pedal, which I'd never had before at my disposal. I always thought, like, well, I'm not going to spend £100 or whatever on a Boss chorus pedal so that I can have chorus on one part of one song. And I said, that seems crazy. So I think the idea of having this multi-effects thing with all the different options, and especially with a view to move on to MIDI and all that stuff, did it seem like an attractive idea.
So you spent £350 on a chorus pedal.
Yeah, it's just the technique is that you go in and you don't think for the whole time that you're in there until you're out of the shop with it in your hand.
Just get into just a blind tunnel vision of
exactly.
I want to get this thing, and then don't look at the money or anything.
Do you think that's what happened to The Cure? Do you think they were so concerned with the fact they'd spent £100 on a chorus
they
pedal?
They had to use it on every song, every single song.
And look, it worked out fine.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure that song of theirs, Boys Don't Cry, that's a Cure song, right?
Yeah.
Sure, that's paid for the chorus.
Yeah,
it'd be
sure
fine.
Is, yeah.
So apart from the Strymons, what else are you using?
I have, you know, the usual, like, Ibanez Tube Screamer, which, I mean, I have to say, Ibanez Max and all that stuff. I'm no connoisseur, just one of the green ones.
Okay.
I think it's a Max on OD9.
I think I just had to go and buy a new one though.
Oh, did you?
I break that? I don't touch it. It's just on, and I don't touch it, and it breaks like every tour. I gotta get a new one. Okay. I have one of them, and you know the Boss noise suppressor, Boss tuner, and now that I have this, you know, ES8 switching system, I've also got a Seymour Duncan 805 on there.
Okay.
That's a great drive pedal.
Is it? I've never used it.
They're
it just
wicked.
Looked nice.
Yeah.
it just looked... Well,
I mean,
it just
they're
looked
great.
Nice.
They're essentially, great. It's doing exactly the same job as the Tube Screamer that you've got. But they
in fact,
do...
the only time I tried it, I thought, well, it doesn't really do the job as well as I'd like.
I mean,
that would... But it looks great.
That would kind of be my thoughts on the 805 as well. It looks amazing. It's just a variation on a Tube Screamer that does something slightly different.
Yeah, I was going through a period where I just thought, like, buying gear was funny or something. So I did it, and I have a Sir Coco Boost as well.
Okay.
Because this is another reason why I'm excited to get the switcher, is that we do have some clean parts, believe it or not. And you know, I don't, with all the tap dancing, your clean tone gets decimated when you've got a tube screamer on and the noise suppressor on, and it's not really a clean sound, and you're not getting the best out of it. But now to be able to have like a something like a Cocoa Boost and be able to actually knock off the noise suppressor without tap dancing, actually kind of actually get the full potential out of what I have on there.
Yeah, you're losing some of the dynamics, I guess, when you've got that noise suppressor on, because there's kind of a fear of playing too quietly and you're just not actually going to get anything out because you're not going to break the threshold. So yeah, actually taking it out of the loop will probably sound really different.
Really different.
So you'll be free to do, you know, that famous Architects cover of Stairway to Heaven.
Finger picking. Yeah, exactly. And the tone will be there and we won't get, you know, complaints from the fans because they care about this stuff.
So how did you stumble across the ESA?
Well, I had been looking for an option. I know that some people go down the sort of having the pedals in the rack and all that stuff, but I really wanted to just have it all out in front of me, especially if I'm going to have spent that much money on those three Strymon pedals. I want to be able to look at them. Especially because I just bought them because they look nice.
Just have your tech just looking at them. Not even looking at them, they're just in a rack somewhere.
Gathering dust.
Never see them.
So yeah, and you know, everyone likes the look of a sort of big pedal board, don't they? I mean, if you're a guitarist, that's great. So I was looking for a switching system, and then I do have a, you know, a sort of working relationship with Boss, and I saw they're bringing it out, and it just looked like a great bit of kit, and everywhere I read about it said it was great. So from the moment I heard about it, I was hassling them and put it off. But I actually only just got it a couple of months ago, and I feel like I'm just sort of at the tip of the iceberg really with it, because of the amount of things you can do with it. I from what I can tell at this point, if I'm honest, I haven't like got in the rehearsal room with it or anything, but it seems fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean, we spend every year we do a rundown of like the best gear that came out this year and of the year, and we did it. So this year was the third year, and we spent, I think in total, maybe 6 or 7 hours, like just recording podcasts, whittling down what was the best thing of the year, and I really rallied against it, but the ESA won out,
and rightly so.
The ESA won the Guitar Nerds Gear of the Year last year.
Really?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, ooh. And even like, even I'm starting to come around to the functionality of it.
I mean, you don't have enough pedals to.
Well, no, but like, it's like, cause did you see they've just released the ES5? Mm-hmm. Yeah, which has got a few fewer features, but. That now I'm starting to be like, okay, cool, I can understand where they're going with this and what they're doing. And
I agree.
Yeah, I just think it's cool that it's out there, and it's.
I'm waiting for the bigger one. ES16.
They could do it.
The ES500.
Well, you can link up two ES8s, can't you?
Oh, you can.
Yeah. If you're a psychopath.
When does Matt start doing that?
I just got back off tour with two bands that are podcast listeners, and.
Okay.
One of the bands.
So you have Vassar, to say nice things about them.
Yeah. No. Vassar are I can't swear on the podcast, so no. I can't say what they are. But terrible people. But their two guitarists were sporting ES8s for the first time, and the other band, Deacon, they were also sporting an ES8 for their one guitarist.
It's weird, isn't it? And we talked about this the other day, I think. Like
all since the Gear of the Year award, by the way.
Oh wow, there we go. You know,
Boss.
When they first, yes, indeed. When they first announced it, we were like, "What are they thinking?"
Yeah,
like it's Boss. They're not like they're doing like a boutique pedal switching system. Yeah. And they were announcing some other stuff as well that we kind of knew before it came out. And we're like, "Oh, that sounds amazing, brilliant." Forget about that pedal switching. Like that's never going to go anywhere. It's one of these things that's going to come out. It'll die within 6 months, and then you'll never see it again, except for like car boot sales or like junk shops, that sort of thing. Yeah. And it's been like. Unbelievably popular.
Yeah.
Just because it's done what some previous pedals have done in the past, but as soon as you put the Boss name on it, obviously it reaches a wider audience. But they've also brought the price down massively because they can, because
but
they're Boss.
But still managed to get people to spend £500 on a Boss product.
Completely, but when the equivalent is much more expensive.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Did you look at like a Gig Rig switching system or a Carl Martin one? Or was it just the Boss one?
Is Carl Martin the Octa?
The Octa switch. Not quite the same thing, but
Adam would probably be able to tell you.
Right, okay.
I think I looked at the RJM. You know, and I think another band we had been on tour with had, maybe it was the RJM, the one we got the individual screens for each patch.
Right,
sort of
okay.
Thing. I mean, it sounds like a small detail, but it was kind of important to me to have something to tell me what the patch
yeah,
was.
Yeah, for yeah. sure, yeah.
Because
yeah.
every song has. Yeah, I need to know what I'm...
A handful of parts and you need to see where you are. Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, it'll be a small screen on the ESA. Just being able to have that prompt of where you are and what you're on is a big feature, really, for me.
How about hooking it up to the amp? Have you got your head around how that's all going to work? Because the diesels are quite heavily MIDI featured, aren't they?
Yeah, well, either I'm being a total klutz and... Well, I mean, I'm happy to admit I'm not particularly great with gear. I mean, like I say, we were carrying them around old 6505s in cardboard boxes 2 years ago. This isn't like a long time past. I simply haven't had the money, you know. Yeah. So, and I don't read instructions.
I like the refusal to get even flight cases. Just using the cardboard box.
We've got flight cases now. Okay. I've got a diesel. I've struggled to get it set up with my Herbert, but that's all part of my trip tomorrow. That if we can't get it set up tomorrow, I'm going to replace the MIDI chip in it because, either it's me just not knowing what I'm doing or there is a problem. So
it's probably without sounding harsh, it probably is that it's not been set up correctly. Mm. That's I think the hardest thing actually is getting the ESA to talk to like an amp, like getting it to do switching.
Yeah.
Via MIDI, I think, is the most difficult bit.
Sure. But well, I have to admit, I'm completely stumped.
I'm sure there'll be a way. So,
Of course.
Do you guys use anything like Ableton or anything like that live? Like, do you pull in any MIDI?
We do use Ableton Live now. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We were using Mainstage.
Okay.
I think, and we just had problems. We did a show. We did a show in Cologne just a month ago. I think it was like 4,000 people, and we get on stage, and I look at my brother Dan, who's playing drums, and he just looks at me and goes, just mouths out, "No click." You know, we're all on ears, so we've got no click. So, but the tracks are still on, so he just has to count in at a guessing at a point, and we're all out with all the click and everything, and then my foot switch broke, and then the neck pickup popped out of my guitar.
it's crazy.
One single show.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Yeah. It was bizarre. It really was. It wasn't meant to be, or something.
You've hit some sort of weird, like magnetic fault line.
Yeah, that was it.
Like Cologne, you just need to avoid Cologne for
which is a shame because it's one of the best places in the world.
Yeah,
but never mind. Never
you
mind.
You can catch that on YouTube. Under Architects Threads.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I'm sure it is up there. The reason I ask is because obviously one of the thing about the ES8 is you can pull in MIDI automation. So, is that something that you'd ever consider? It means that you wouldn't have to do any tap dancing at all.
Mm.
Pulling in obviously the click track from Ableton to do your MIDI switching on the pedals itself.
You know, I mean, maybe I'm just, you know, taking baby steps right now because it has been discussed and I've thought maybe there's something I like about it. Like I say, I didn't want to tuck away all my Strymons in a drawer, so maybe there is something I still like about getting to do this myself.
It does come to a point where you're just going through the motions, take too much away.
Well,
I think
there's two ways of looking at it. Some people who do that do it because obviously then they're not tied to the pedal board on stage. Mm. They can run around, and particularly if they're using wireless, then it means that they're not connected to anything. The pedal's on stage, so they can still see them, and if they need to get hands on and turning delay times and things like that, they can do it. But it means that they're not standing over the pedal board the whole time, but there is definitely an argument to be said about still actually treading on things and feel like you're playing guitar still. So
when you get to that, like, you know, that queen, the point of Queen, where, you know, you've got the stage that extends 100 meters out to the audience, and you and Sam can go out and, you know, you can play the solo while you're covering Bohemian Rhapsody or something.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And you know you don't want to have to like drag the pedal board along behind you. Maybe that will be the time to. to move to automation?
I think that it sounds quite serious, but these things sort of come along at a time when the time is right. And I've resisted a lot of change. I didn't, you know, our whole band was like, I don't want to get in-ears. And then we got in-ears and we loved it. Yeah. I don't want to get a baritone. And then I got a baritone and I loved it. You know, so these things do end up coming along. And I could say now, oh, yeah, that sounds a bit much to me. But then I'm sure if we set it up, I'd be like a giggling child, you know.
When you're
like,
just playing and your effects are turning on
and
off.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure I'd be in awe of it if we actually did it.
Do you know what I think the best thing would be? Just watching the lights change without you treading on anything. I think that would be actually far more magical than actually listening to the audio.
I mean, I'm excited enough just by pressing a button on the ESA and seeing several pedals change patch and stuff. Ooh,
wait till the amp starts going as well.
Incredible.
Well, that's good to hear you using an ES8 because we love it. I think I'm going to get an ES5. Like, I don't
know. For what?
Well, there's some pedals down
You've
there.
You've got a Hughes and Kettner and five pedals.
Yeah, but I like
this
it.
This was the argument that I had in against the ES8. And you were like, nah, man, it doesn't matter. Even if you only got eight pedals, ES8, you need one.
Thing is, there's some pedals on the board over there. We're sat next to a big stack of pedals that are like review things that I kind of want to buy one of them or at least a couple of them. So they'll probably end up going on a board somewhere and then I could have a little ES5.
Be great.
You should get one. Everyone should get one.
Yeah, that Ramble Marvel Drive, I think once we've done the video, I'm going to buy it. It's an amazing pedal.
So, yeah?
Yeah. Because I could talk about that for a while. We did have some questions. Sure. That have come in for you. We've covered quite a lot of it already, but maybe there's some more insight that we can kind of go over. Someone called At Least You Know on Twitter said, did you learn to play acoustic first and then go to electric? Who did you look up to back then? So we've covered a fair bit of that.
Yeah.
Acoustic guitar wise, do you own one?
No.
Okay.
Well, I've got a tiny little miniature one for some reason.
Okay.
I mean, when I was a kid, I think I bought it like when I was properly a child, and
okay.
It was something I could take on holiday with me and still be able to play guitar. But no, I'd love to have one. I've come close to buying one, but I just thought my money would be best spent elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever been offered like anything endorsement wise, or has anyone ever kind of sent one your way?
I think maybe I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I feel like that has happened.
Okay.
And I will get one eventually because I whenever someone has an acoustic guitar, I love playing it. But no.
Are there any
come by R and that?
Yeah,
all
yeah,
that
indeed.
Stuff, yeah.
Are there any times in the studio where you've used one?
Yeah, a few times. Yeah,
okay.
on our last record, which obviously isn't out yet, but when people hear it, they'll think, "Where the hell did you play acoustic guitar?"
Okay,
So that's the new record. We should do
a plug. Let's just quickly do these, and
okay,
we'll talk about
the
new record, and we can talk about where maybe an acoustic fits in to that. See if people can spot it, I guess. So let's do talking about a new record. Actually, this question says, I have trouble recording heavy guitars into a song mix. Do you have any useful tips? Now, we talked about this before we started, and you said probably not. But I kind of wanted to know about your experience of studio recording and how you guys go about that, whether you all play together or is it drums first and then you build around that? And how do you kind of approach the guitars?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's absolutely painstaking, that's for
okay.
sure. I mean, yeah, okay, well, for a start, we start on the drums, yeah, and
I love that question. That's such a punk band question. You go, do you start on the drums? Yeah, every single band starts.
No.
Except for you, for
I'm
going to
go and record
just
an album in a day.
Of course you
so
are.
We're
yeah,
going to do the drums, we'll
band.
Do everything at once.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It'd be a nice idea, but no, it's really slow and really grueling, and yeah, so we do the drums, and it's cool that we've been to Gothenburg to Studio Fredman for the last two, and after the drums, it's like you can do anything, really, because we have all the demo guitars and stuff, so we could do drums and then start the vocals, but we just sort of take it whatever we fancy, really. But I played all the guitars on the last two records, and the guitars are quad-tracked, and so it's like, I mean, I spent, and I'm not embarrassed to admit, a day recording one riff on this record that's coming out.
When you say quad-tracked, you're playing exactly the same part four times.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's without any like extra layering and other things going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are they going straight in? Are you using different guitars, or are they being reamped for different like EQ tweaks and effect tweaks and stuff?
We use two different setups, so it would be it was a dual rec, and then had something to do with a slave. You guys might
okay. yeah.
It was slaving the diesel.
Okay, fine.
And then the other one was
that's the right
same setup, but with thanks, man. an EVH, one of the Fender EVHs.
Oh, okay,
which
cool,
are
cool.
Good amps, I think. Yeah. And that was being slaved with the Engel.
Okay.
And I can't remember the cabs. And so yeah, so that was yeah. Like, one of them on either side or whatever. So, and it was really grueling and really slow, and especially with the low tuning, that was the hardest bit. That was the reason it would take me a day, not because I'm terrible at guitar, but just because getting four guitars to all have the exact same velocity on a
you get so much
F-sharp,
shake. Yeah,
it's.
And oh. I'd also imagine tuning is an issue. Even tuning just, you know, regular E to E, the studio engineer always after a take will be, yeah, you need to check the tuning, something's gone out. I can't imagine what that's like over a longer scale length tuned down.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's extreme, like it just gets to the point where you just had enough. Like, for the love of God, I can't play this anymore. But no, I mean, the thing is, we'd never quad tracked before, and I have to say, you know, at the end of both times, we said never again. I'm never doing that quad tracking business. It's a nightmare. But it sounds so huge that, yeah, I mean, I can't argue with the results.
So I guess that's, to go back to the question, I guess that kind of answers it really. It's like, how do you make heavy guitars sit in the mix? I guess you just record them a lot of times.
A lot of times. Well, I have to say that I'm no genius with this stuff, and I you know, I credit with the way the records sound with the guys at the studio. Those are the guys that know what they're doing, and you know, I would love it if someone could tell me that you could make it sound just as good
without
quad tracking. And maybe I'll find out sometime in the future, but yeah, I mean, that's just one method. I'm sure there are other great sounding metal records that haven't done that, so
yeah. Just looking at these questions, we've kind of covered most of the stuff people are asking. So, shall we? I guess we'll talk about the new record a little bit. Do you want to tell us a bit about it? I mean,
sure.
You've already said how it was, or a lot of how it was recorded, but
yeah.
What's the what's it called? When's it out? And what's it about?
Okay. Well, it's called All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us. It's out May 27th. And
is it on Epitaph again?
It's on Epitaph again, which we're extremely. That's yeah, delighted about. It's just great. Fantastic.
I almost wore my mid-90s Epitaph t-shirt today. I completely forgot that was where the record was coming out.
They do.
It was just the last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That was the first one. It's just such a fantastic label.
Were you into, like, did you grow up listening to any of those bands?
No.
Of course not. Of course you didn't, because Epitaph have changed.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. But, like, yeah. You know, I didn't know if it... Because it's quite interesting to me, I guess.
Because you care about, like, mid-90s Epitaph.
Well, yeah. Like, you know, some of those records that came out in that...
20 years ago.
Were, like... and but the way that the... I just think that Epitaph is a very interesting example of a record label surviving... You know, you look at how many record labels, you know, independent record labels are still around from then to now. And the reason that they are is that they didn't just stick at releasing Bad Religion records. Mm-hmm. You know, Brett had
Punk-a-rama
the...
Punk-a-rama VHS copies.
You know, he had the sort of wits about him to be like, okay, actually, this is where music's going. Let's roll with it.
You're right that it's down to him, and he's the real deal. He really cares, and he's really interested and invested actually in what he's releasing. He doesn't just leave it to someone else. Yeah, sign that, I'm sure it's good. You know, I had a phone call with him after we did our last record with him about what, you know, he wanted to have input about what the best songs were for singles and stuff, and he could talk to me about the record and what the best songs were and all this stuff. I'd never been on a label, with the exception of right way back when we were working with In at the Deep End, which is a one-man operation. So, of course, he's heard it.
Yeah.
But I was sort of blown away by that, and really, I don't know, I can't speak highly enough of the label. They just do everything right, you know, and they have their heart in the right place, and yeah, it's great. So we're really happy to be with them. And what's the record about? It's about a lot of things.
Is it going to be political again, or more political?
It's got that sort of political vibe in there. But I have to say, like, I do feel in myself a little bit like, okay, like, you know, I get it, you know. Like, I don't know. But lots of bands do that for their whole career, and that's just, you know. But when I wrote it, that's where I was at. I wrote the lyrics on the record, and so I drove it in that direction. And you know, that's just the natural course.
But
it took.
You say a lot of bands do that for their whole career. Like, I don't think there's a lot of bands within your genre who write about like environmental issues.
No, and you're political. An ambassador for Sea Shepherd as well.
Yeah, yeah. Sam, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
oh,
he is. Yeah, yeah.
Sam,
yeah.
And
I mean,
yeah,
we're all involved, but Sam is actually an ambassador for Sea Shepherd.
The UK ambassador for Sea Shepherd, which is an incredible, like an incredible thing to.
No, I mean, and we're really proud. I mean, when I think about my band, I feel like I have a lot of pride with what we've become and what we stand for, and you know, whether it's Sam being involved with Sea Shepherd or all of us being vegan and being involved with Peter too and all that sort of stuff. I'm proud of that stuff, yeah. And I don't regret writing about this stuff. Like I say, I mean, whatever happens, happens at the time we write about it. But it's also maybe a little bit more about maybe some more personal or esoteric sort of ideas. I mean, that's what the title's sort of alluding to anyway. You know, I've always been sort of a band of diehard atheists, and maybe we're sort of going, maybe there is something more than just sort of what we can see and feel and whatever. But that's an awfully long conversation.
It's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about that, we're basically up at time. Like, we've done an episode. And
wow, how about that?
I know, that didn't feel like an hour at all. So what I think we should do, just so you know, we have a Patreon campaign running. We do a little extra half an hour for people that are signed up to the Patreon. Mm-hmm. You're more than welcome to stick around.
Sure.
I reckon we'll do a more normal kind of episode.
Yeah,
there's been some news and
stuff.
You went to a bass show that we can talk about and things like that. And we've got some questions from the Facebook group and stuff like that. So, yeah, let's call this one here. We'll head over to Patreon and do some more stuff over there. If you don't know, or if you want to get that episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where for as little as $5 a month you'll get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. Or for $10 a month you become one of our exclusive Patreon producer backer type people who go on.
You have to join in. With
wait,
what we're
wait,
about to
oh
do.
My, no,
wait, what
no.
are you going to do?
I'm going to sacrifice the reading out.
Okay.
How good would that be?
So Tom's going to read out the list of names of our Patreon exclusive
normally
producers.
I would read out everyone's names, normally changing their last names to include a rude word or reading it in a silly voice, but I think
you
can
just
should
do it in your normal
just,
voice.
My
just
voice
read
is silly
out.
Enough to begin with.
And we'll provide some sort of a cappella backing track for you to read these names.
Okay. So I just take
just,
it away,
just,
huh?
Yeah,
that's
just,
right,
read,
yeah,
just read those names out.
Right. We have David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Joe Deptobe, Eric Seary, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott O'Brien, Matt Queen, Fletcher, good name, Phil Thompson, Laurie Ansis, and this, yeah, sorry, Laurie, might have got that wrong. Moog Gravit, well, that's a good name. Colin Anderson.
Yes, there we
nice.
Go.
Nice, there we go.
Perfect. Right down, perfect.
Solid. Like
you almost,
yeah, we're yeah. getting very well.
We are getting too many Patreon backers
yeah.
to do this.
We've capped it at 20. It's worth saying that actually, we've only got 4 spaces left. So, at the end of the yeah, there's only 4. If you want to have your name read out at the end of the podcast every week, then yeah, there's 4 spaces left. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Or you can go to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, or on Twitter @guitar nerds, on Instagram @guitar nerds, Periscope @guitar nerds, or you can go over to the website guitarnerds.net. You can read the review that I just put up of the Planet Waves pedal patch cable kit pedal board patch cable kit.
Or you could hit yourself with a hammer.
I like accessories.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
I actually, in terms of doing the review,
that's why you wear so many rings.
I did a lava cable thing. I was very impressed.
Did you?
I enjoyed it, yeah.
Okay.
I say that, I got our base plus.
Yeah.
Accessories are where it's at. And then I wrote about that in the review itself.
Well done.
I've just, so just before we jump away, I've just seen the first
jump
question.
Jump away?
Jump away. I've just seen the first question, which I'm really interested in Tom's input in. So we'll...
rude.
We'll get that answered next
definitely,
time.
Definitely. Just so you know, we've got questions from Ollie, we've got questions from Will, Si, Lee, Adam, and Charlie, all going to be answered over in the Patreon episode. Thanks so much for joining this week. We didn't actually say where you can find architects and stuff on the internet.
Yeah. Where can you? I don't know, most people just find it on YouTube, don't they?
I hear a lot of people do use YouTube.
Yeah, I don't know. Look it on there. If you like it, go on iTunes or something.
Okay, good.
I've got the Google AdWords thing down.
Yeah, just to Architects Band,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is that your Twitter? Architects Band?
UK, yeah.
Architects UK. And yours is Tom Architects.
Tom Architects, yeah.
There we go.
Cool. All right, well, let's do a bit more in the Patreon. And if you're not going to join us there, we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Bye.
Farewell.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.